Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that have come out this week. Let's kick it off with Scarlet Witch, number one from Marvel.
Oh, man.
Written by Steve Orlando.
Banger right out of the box.
Don't ruin it. I don't know what Pete thinks about this book. Written by Steve Orlando, art by Sarah Pacelli. Now, this is, of course, a new number one that is picking up on the legacy of Scarlet Witch. And I'll throw out up front, the thing that I really liked about this is a really concrete, smart concept about Scarlet Witch restarting at a store that has a magic door that brings people in need directly to her. Feels like a very clear pitch, clear idea. I always really respect that in a number one. And I also respect the fact that it didn't go for the typical Scarlet Witch stuff of Chthon and her history. It touches on that, but it hits it in a very different way. Like Pete, I really appreciated this book. Pete, why did you think it was a banger, though?
Well, first off, the art is just super tight bananas. It's really nice. They get through so much in this issue. You get really excited about where it's going, but there's so many cameos. They tackle a lot of things at a good pace. Like, she goes through three adventures in this issue, and it's just really impressive to see her handling business and how she's going about her day and her new kind of business. And I think it's such a great job of like this magical door where somebody needs help, they walk through it and boom, let's get it going. So I thought it was such a great choice to have that door and kind of have her have this like central location, put her one spot and see what she can do. I think it's a ton of fun.
I agree. The Sarah Pacelli art is very dense plantains. And I think that the story is really fun. Like Alex was saying, like to really go in hard with the premise, like, we're setting up shop and the magic door brings people and we get to see it twice, once in a fun way that sets up the issue and once is a great last page reveal that I thought was a great way to introduce some intrigue and great continuity stuff into it. And I got a shout out, Steve Orlando, upstate New York guy. Get a shout out to Utica Greens in this. It's a local delicacy. And if you haven't had Utica Greens, this is like a great day. Alex, you know what I'm talking about?
No, I want to hear about it though.
Come on, Utica.
City of upstate New York.
Get up, Utica. Get up.
I went to college near Utica. Great town. Drive through there a lot these days. Utica greens are some sort of greens cooked with a little bit of like sausage or some sort of nice salted meat situation, a little bit of spice to them. If you see it on a menu, it's become a little bit of a fad dish even down in New York City. Definitely order it. Great little dish.
I am shocked that we've gotten 4 minutes into this podcast or so, and Pete did not mention that this comic also canonically introduces Darcy, his favorite character from the Marvel Cinematic Universe of this comic. Pete, you should not be cheersing right now. You messed up. You didn't mention Kat Dennings.
You messed up.
What I'm talking about it's on my list of things.
I mentioned it. So Kat Dennings loves me now and hates you.
How dare you?
Yes.
How glorious is this? Kat is now in comics. It's legit. You can't take her away from us. She is now a part of this world in all ways, shapes, or forms. And she should be. She's fantastic in everything she does, even this comic book. It's great to have her finally.
I don't know if Kat Dennings is actually the one playing the drawing in the comic.
She is. She's that good.
I don't think she's performing
she's that
the role.
Good. Yeah, no.
Wow. Anyway, great first issue. Really strong start. Excited to see where this goes, particularly like Justin was saying, after the cliffhanger. Next up, another number one, Mosley, number one from Boom Studios, written by Rob Gilroy, art by Sam Lofty. I'm going to spoil a little bit of the premise. There's a bit of a twist a couple of pages in here, but starts off with this guy, Mosley, who seemingly has been recruited to train a AI for a year, and then it jumps forward crazy far in the future to show how that was the worst decision he possibly could make. Kind of wrecks the future a little bit, certainly wrecks his future. And we deal with that for a little while before there's another big twist with the concept at the end of the book. I thought this was a great, very strong first issue, very surprising. How did you guys feel?
I mean, the double swerve really caught me off guard in a good way and kept me sort of leaning back in twice to be like, what is this? What is this? Because it goes from sort of like guy dealing
fish
with
out of water.
Fish out of water, like, you know, sci-fi premise, like soft sci-fi premise. Then it goes very hard sci-fi, crotchety older guy, hard right. sci-fi premise yeah. to very comic booky, I would argue, swerve in the last sort of last third of the book. That's a good, it's hard to make something with two swerves. I don't know how much driving you guys do, but two swerves is bad, especially in winter. So the fact that this works so well and doesn't fishtail is really good.
Yeah, you got to pump your brakes. You know what I mean? Otherwise, you're going to fishtail. You know what I mean?
But you got to sort of, you know, stutter it. You can't just
yeah,
hit
you
hard
feather
because
him. You got to feather it, dude. Come on.
Feather the brakes.
You guys know this isn't a upstate New York podcast, right?
Alex will be the judge of that.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'll tell you what, we've got an upstate quorum here, motherfucker. You can take your downstate shit and go screw.
Yeah. Shout outs to my people in Buffalo. I hope you're getting power back, man. Shit is crazy. Anyways, I do think that the swerves that are taking this book are fantastic, very creative, amazing art. Yeah, it kind of starts off with this guy who doesn't like his job, a little bit of a ornery older person's like, damn technology, these days
Pete,
of kids.
You must
you
have been
I mean?
Really identifying.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is like you opening your phone, opening TikTok on your phone.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's one of those things where you kind of like, okay, I understand where this is going. And then, you know, we kind of get to meet his daughter and everything that she's going through. And you're like, okay, all right, this is really going to be an interesting. And then that third switch there, all of it happens in the first issue, doesn't seem rushed, seems like it flows really nicely. The art sets up the world really well. I was impressed by this. I'm looking forward for more.
There you go. Next up, Batman 131 from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Mike Hawthorne and Miguel Mendoza. This is following up with a huge, I don't even know if it's cliffhanger, it was
huge.
The edge of huge failsafe arc last issue yeah. where it looked like Batman died. In this issue, we're picking up. Of course, Batman didn't die, but we find out where he is and what's going on with him as he is trying to figure out himself. Meanwhile, back in the real world, in the backup story, we've got Nightwing and Tim Drake are basically like, no, Batman's not dead. We got to figure out where he is and what's going on. We've dealt with this before. So lots of stuff going on here. How do you feel this followed up on the failsafe arc, which I think we all agreed felt like a big budget Justice League Batman yeah. action movie that we have never seen before?
Well, I think it's continuing that and then pushing it out even further into sort of like larger event. It's a little bit like we talked about Chip's work over on Daredevil, where he was writing like a line-wide event in the pages of Daredevil. And this is not line-wide in the same way, but it's like it feels like something that like 5-10 years ago would have been a major Batman event, but it's all being told within the pages of this title. And that's really cool. It's big. It is like spanning a lot of ideas, but bringing in some new villains, some weirder villains, older villains rearing their head. And then to have the Bat extending out in the Bat family, I think is really nice as well.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a huge, crazy ending. And then this issue does really explain everything, just kind of picks up where stuff left off, which is very interesting. It kind of seems like maybe Batman's out of his mind a little bit, talking to a skeleton. It seems like Commissioner Gordon in some way. So it's like,
it's skeleton really with a mustache, man. Gotta
I mean, what
Gordon.
Else do you yeah. need? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So like,
well, your mustache starts at the bones, right, Pete?
You're damn right.
Your yeah, mustache right starts at the bones.
That's his pickup right. line in bars.
Yeah. Hey, my mustache starts at the bones. Hey. Pete, when Pete's out at the bar, he's got a real deep voice out there. Hey, brother, you want to go get a beer? My mustache starts at the bones.
This is fun. Yeah, I just what I like about this is
I'll be your wingman any day.
Okay, great. What I like about this is it's not really explaining anything. It's just kind of sitting in it, and it's a very confident thing to do. I'm enjoying it. I think the art's crazy. It matches the madness that is happening. I'm excited to see where this is going to go and how this is all going to fit together, because it's in a pretty crazy place.
Mm-hmm. Shang-Chi, Master of the Ten Rings, number one from Marvel, written by Gene Lin Yang, art by Michael Ig. This is the finale of Gene Lin Yang's run on Shang-Chi. So if you haven't read that, definitely a big deep dive here, which I was not necessarily expecting. But
for a number one issue.
Yes, for a number one issue. But once you realize that, it's a big blowout. It's a nice conclusion of his run on the title. It definitely brings everything together. And I felt a nice and satisfying way.
I agree. I think this was like such a great issue where it was a lot of things happened. We even got a little hint of a possible romance at the end there. Some great action sequences, a lot of fun characters.
Just like out at the bar when you're using your pickup line, Pete, a little hint of romance.
Yep. And so, yeah, it was really impressive. Everything. And of course, the art is super tight bananas.
I agree. This is. I'm curious where Shang-Chi's going from here. Like, is it a whole new situation? Well, obviously, it's the end of a run, but it feels like this is a character that I feel should get some more due. And straight, I feel like this is a trend also where number ones we're telling stories across a series of number ones, which is frustrating. There's another title doing this too. I forget what it is off the top of my head, but we've covered it.
Are you thinking
of the
Murder World one?
Yes, Murder World, where it's a bunch of number ones, and I'm just like, this is hard to follow, just because it's a sequential story. It's not like it's a reboot and start over.
Just try to sell comics.
This is
you're
not
just
a one.
Sell comics.
Well, absolutely. Like this is not a one-to-one, but it feels like clickbait to me a little bit, where they know that number ones sell comics, so they're just releasing subsequent number ones. When to your point, I agree, Justin, if it was like, I understand from a business perspective, if they sold 5 issues of a Murder World series, they would get less and less sales after each one. Because that's how comics work. Like, that's nothing against the series, which we enjoy. But having it be Murder World X-Men number one, Murder World Spider-Man number one, makes it a weird reading experience and makes it a little bit of a frustrating experience. But I don't know. It is what it is.
But here we are. But it's one of those tricks that, it works, but it's also for the fans, it reverse works. Right. It doesn't work.
I spent the first half of this issue being like, okay, we're relaunching this series. Great. Where are we going? This is the end. This is the end of the series. Nope. But there you go. But still, good run. Next up, Scotch McTiernan's Holiday Party from Image Comics, written by Jerry Dugan and Brian Posehn.
The Dukes.
Art by Scott Koblish. This is the third, I believe, one-shot focusing on a big action hero guy who just likes to get high and go on adventures. And this time, they're getting a riff on A Christmas Carol that's dealing a little bit with some billionaire wealth disparity type stuff, very specifically Elon Musk, it feels like, though they don't explicitly say that. To me, this is the least of the three Scotch McTiernan books that we've read, but I want to turn to our weed expert, Pete, to see how he felt about it.
Oh, hello.
What is weed? I've been wanting to try this stuff.
Oh, man, you're in such a good hands right now. Listen, no, I think this is, just as kind of fun stoner humor stuff. Weed thing, hilarious. You know what I mean? The Santa Claus and Mrs. Santa Claus split up. That's just fun, creative. And then what I like about it is we're going to do this three ghost kind of Christmas bit until we're too stoned to be like, let's just walk away from that. You know, I just think this is kind of just silly, over the top fun with a bunch of weed references sprinkled throughout.
I agree with you, Alex. I like the other ones better. I think this one, the structure is we know this structure from other stories, so maybe that makes it a little less. We're a little bit ahead of some aspects of it, but I think this idea of using we follow a character jumping around in opposition to what we just said about launching a series of number ones. The fact that these are seasonal specials feel like we are following a through line, but they are done in ones with the same character doing similar things. But I think the others had a little bit more fun surprises, while this one is like the Christmas story that we've known, with apologies to Mr. Dickens.
There you go. From Weed to Poison Ivy, number 8 from DC Comics, written by G.
I love edible Poison Ivy gummies. They get me fucked up on the inside. Hey, Pete, did you take Poison Ivy gummy?
And the outside, because it's, it's all
just real quick, for anybody who hasn't listened before, there was one time that Pete called in sick from our live show because he had Poison Ivy in his throat, right?
Yeah, I get it so bad it shuts down everything. I almost
went you can't put it, you can't smoke it, Pete. You can't inhale it in that way.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, I know.
Inhale the poison I do. Right?
And let me, if I remember the story correctly, and maybe you don't want to relive this, but you were at a graveyard somewhere, right? A cemetery, and like somehow rolling around in poison ivy, right?
We visited a graveyard, and I somehow got poison ivy. If I'm anywhere near it.
Sorry, you were rolling around in a graveyard. What were you?
I was not rolling around in a graveyard.
Yeah, were you doing? You walked up to a lady at one of those graves and like, "This mustache go down to the moon."
What is that?
The best thing about cemeteries is for the people you love, you leave flowers, and your enemies, you plant poison ivy on their grave. In your face. Yeah. That's what you were doing, is like really cursing some enemy of yours.
So this is written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Atagon Ilhan. In this issue, Poison Ivy is fighting an old enemy who has brought back her evil-ish, I guess, virus plant that she was layering in across the United States. In the first arc, we get a nice bit of empathy from Poison Ivy in this issue that I wasn't expecting. Yeah. What do you guys think about this one?
I think this story is really, this series is really smartly told. I think the first issues where Poison Ivy was going around killing people and starting a genocidal fungal outbreak that she's going to pull the trigger on eventually.
Yeah.
And it was scary and felt big. It felt like a Black Label book, despite the fact that it is in regular continuity. And I like that the book is starting to push through that premise a little bit and getting into other stuff. She gets in trouble. She's affected by this sort of villain or this person from the past who's coming back to trap her. She meets someone else who she got them fired, basically, or killed her boss. So it's bringing a little bit of continuity, bringing a story together, and getting into some big emotional stuff too. It's really, really smartly done. A lot going on.
Yeah, I really liked the ending. I thought it was a super sweet ending, especially from where it started, where it was real dark and big. I liked how small and kind of sweet it got. Creepy-ass art. The story takes a lot of twists and turns, which is very interesting. Where it started to where we are now. Yeah, it's been all over the place. You don't want to swerve too much, but if you're a really good comic like this is, you can swerve all over the place and be able to pull off some amazing stuff. But yeah, if you ask me, the art's the real hero here.
Joe Fixit, number 1 from Marvel, written by Peter David, art by Yildire Senar. This is going back in time to when Peter David was writing Joe Fixit, the enforcer in Vegas. And we're catching up to an old storyline there involving Spider-Man mixing in Kingpin. I thought this was great. I mean, I love the Joe Fixit storyline. It was fun to revisit it. I know Peter David was doing a bunch of these, but this really worked for me. How did you guys feel about it? I don't know if you have the same level of nostalgia for this storyline.
I know I do. I'm a huge Joe Fixit fan. I mean, the fact that, not only did they bring him back, but they brought him back right. You know what I mean? Pinstripe suit, check. Wingtips.
He looks good.
Check. He's looking, it's tight. It's looking real nice on him. And he is, it's great to see him back and, back in Vegas handling business. And it was awesome to see him go toe to toe with Kingpin. He got a little Spider-Man sprinkled in there. This was a ton of fun. Really brought me back, to when I first started reading comics, and first started checking out Joe Fixit. I had a great time with this. I thought it was a lot of fun.
It'd be interesting to go back and reread the initial Joe Fixit arc, because it's a weird idea that the Hulk, someone who smashes stuff and is like mad, is like, nah, he's gray now. He puts on a suit and he works as a Vegas enforcer for local mob people. I was like, it's such a strange turn.
What? Yeah, I mean, what? What's you know?
Who knows? Yeah. Grant.
Yeah. So, like, it's funny to be back here in sort of a story that doesn't blink at that premise. It's just like, nope, that's where we are. In fact, we don't even really see Joe Fixit until a bit later in the issue. We see Spider-Man for a lot of it, Kingpin. Spider-Man is doing this classic putting spider tracers on stuff, which yeah. Can't believe that trick still works. But good to see Joe Fixit back. Where does he get his suits tailored? I want to know.
Radiant Pink, it's number 2 from Image Comics, written by Megan Camarena and Melissa Flores, art by Emma Kubert. In this issue, Radiant Pink and a woman from the hospital that she saved last issue are trapped in various dimensions. They keep jumping through the dimensions and maybe jumping into love with each other.
Oh!
I continue to enjoy the Radiant Universe. I thought this was very fun, and particularly for Emma Kubert's art. I thought she gets to play around in a bunch of different dimensions, and that was very fun to see.
Yeah, it's just, you know, this continues to deliver. We have some time traveling, maybe love back and forth. Just fun. They're having a great time with it. You got giant cats and giant cat robots. I mean, art's great. They're having a great time. What's not to love here?
The Radiant Universe continues to just be a confident storytelling unit. And this second issue, like the letters page has a title. They're getting into the – it feels like old school comics, but with new stories, new characters, obviously. And I wonder – I know we spend a lot of time, or I do anyway, speculating about the Radiant Verse, about what's up with it. Is it just going to keep expanding out sort of like the planets, or is it all going to like smash together at some point in the near future with a big event? Do we have a big event coming, do you think?
Yeah, we definitely have a big event coming. They've been teasing that in Radiant Black. So I think they are going to keep expanding it until there are enough characters and enough people fleshed out there that it will feel like a legit crossover. And I respect the fact that they're taking their time, that they're not doing like, we've done a year, now we're doing our crossover, everybody's coming together. Instead, they're really taking time to figure out all of these Radiants. We haven't even had series for all of the Radiants yet. They're adding some new characters as well with No One, and I'm forgetting what the other one is. Inferno Girl Red, I think, is the title. So we're going to get a couple more there. So it's going to be a while, and that's great. Keep it going. Build it up. Should be good stuff.
Buckle up, Justin. We've still got more to go.
Let's ride!
The Joker, The Man Who Stopped Laughing, number 4 from DC Comics, written by Matthew Rosenberg.
Bergie!
Art by Carmine G. Gianna Domenico and Francesco Francavilla. In this issue, our maybe Joker, maybe not Joker, not 100% sure, is going through a hospital and trying to escape from the police. Meanwhile, in the backup story, we get a little bit of a clue as maybe what is going on with these two Jokers, though maybe it's a feint, maybe not. I guess we'll have to see. This title continues to be spooky, upsetting, and good.
Yeah, I mean, the art is STB to the max. I mean, this is some really crazy looking stuff, which matches the vibe of this book. I mean, we have different Jokers kind of doing different things. He's running around a hospital here causing chaos. Fun bits about Batman with the sick kids there. I liked him ripping on Robin and taking shots at Red Hood. I thought that was fun stuff. If you read a lot of comics, you can get these bits. I just think it's just a great use of Joker and the chaos. And the fact that he's kind of struggling with what to do with this other Joker is also kind of interesting. So, yeah, I'm having a great time with this book. It's super weird in all the right ways.
Will we ever run out of Joker stories? I guess not, because here comes some more. I really like
the – why do you want them to end?
I'm not saying they should
end.
They're great. I'm just saying that's a natural resource we seem to have a lot of backup for. Like the amount of times you can talk about bananas. It's infinite. So I like this. Shout out to the backstory. I really like the Francesco Francovilla art. It's very dense plantains, something I say a lot. So that's my unrelated catchphrase. Really fun story in the back. Dr. Phosphorus. There's this great panel of Dr. Phosphorus being like, "It's me, Dr. Phosphorus." It's just fun. It's to have a funny Joker story is something that we don't get enough of, and this one hits.
Yeah. The Avengers, number 64 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Javier Garan. In this issue, we're continuing the Avengers Assemble storyline that is pitting them versus the army of Mephisto and the multiversal Masters of Evils. Over in the Avengers, we're following the main Avengers team as well as the Avengers of 6 million BC as they fight the multiversal Masters of Evil. There's a point to this issue where I believe it's Tony Stark is like, "I don't know what's going on anymore." And that's kind of how I felt reading this book, but at the same time, still having fun.
Yeah, it's just the ultimate, like, Jason Aaron is doing the ultimate, like, Avengers toy box, smash them up. Like, it's a rainy Saturday. You get the whole day to play with your toys. So you're going to get weird. You're going to mix up everyone's clothes. Everyone's going to be extra ideas are dropping in. This is, like, every big idea. It's a smash up of all the villains at their peak, with the biggest solutions and ways to beat them happening all the time, while at the same time telling sort of an intense Tony Stark story. He encounters his dad, or who, what he thinks but also knows isn't his dad. And there's a great page in this where Tony Stark just reflects on like a dozen memories of like it being with the Avengers. And it's such a sweet page in this book, and the way that Jason Aaron can tell this massive landscape of like big storytelling while also knocking us in, jumping out on these super tiny emotional detail moments is all I can ask for in comics.
Yeah, it's really impressive all that is happening here. There's a lot of over-the-top madness going on, but also really sweet small stuff as well. Plus, I love a good Doom last page reveal, and man, is this it's a big one.
It's Only Teenage Wasteland, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, yeah, written by Kurt Pyers, art by Jacoby Salcedo. In the first issue of this book, we met a bunch of teenagers who are doing very typical teenage stuff, and then there's a cliffhanger at the end where they ended up in a, I would say, teenage wasteland, I guess. We find out
post-apocalypse.
There you go. Yeah. We find out a little bit more about what's going on, as well as a bunch of weirdness in this issue as we continue to follow the characters. If you are a fan of What's the Furthest Place from Ear, this is the direct one-to-one, particularly because of the Kurt Pyers connection. Great stuff.
I agree. It has it's a smaller scale story. What's the Furthest Place from Here sort of feels like it's going into the Warriors nature of it, with all the different gangs and sort of big world interaction between everyone. And this feels a little bit an equally or similar weird post-apocalypse world where we don't quite know what's happening, but we're focused on a smaller group of people. Though we have a expansion at the end of this issue into at least a new character that is related to them in some way that we won't spoil, but really in violent fights at the end here, right?
Yeah.
Anybody else? Pete, bloodthirsty, licking your lips, love the taste of blood in the morning?
Oh, man, nothing gets you going. I think we've seen so many post-poc stories before, but what I really like about this is there is a brightness to it. There is some hope to it. There is the way it's drawn doesn't make it seem so depressing and futuristic that seems so grim. So I like the changes that they're making on the thing we've seen a bunch. And I like the small kind of story we're getting about two kids who kind of grew up together and their trials and tribulations. So I'm really enjoying it. This book is killing it, man.
Planet Hulk, Worldbreaker, number 3 from Marvel, written by Greg Pak, art by Manuel Garcia. In this issue, the Amadeus Cho of 1,000 Years in the Future is trying to track down Jen Walters, who it turns out is powering, if not the entire planet, at least a part of it, with her gamma powers. lots of other returning faces this issue as well. Pete, I know you were geeking out about this one, so take it away.
Talk about post-Pac. We got post-Greg Pac coming back with more Pac.
Yeah, exactly. That I'm going to get to that if you'd let me talk. So this is just great times, okay? We're learning more and more, tons more action, tons more adventure, traps being set. I mean, I just love waking up in a world breaker world. You know what I mean? This is the most Greg Pak-ing it story that Greg Pak has ever done, and I'm loving the Greg Pak out of it. You know what I mean? It's just Pak on top of Pak. And I can't get enough of it. I'm just, I love the characters, the use of Amadeus Cho, the all the different kind of stuff. It's a great use of She-Hulk in here. This is just a ton of Pac-tastic fun.
Like Pokemon, Pete's a Pac-a-mon who can only speak in the word Pac. A Pac on both your houses, I say, because this book is wild. It takes the old Planet Hulk stuff and gets one step weirder, one step away from Hulk into other Hulks that we don't see coming. Like, sure, I've powered a city with my gamma radiation in my time, and it's hard work. So it's great to see, or at least a borough, parts of Brooklyn, the neighborhood anyway. I just plugged in and kept it going for a while. So I get what She-Hulk's going through here. She had to step away for a minute, and then it's like, hurry up, get back and power the city, because that's how the city is powered. I'm curious, is this story going to continue to get sort of weirder and get deeper into random Hulk pockets? It feels like yes. And by pockets, I mean P-A.
Hulk pockets.
Greg pockets.
We do have a good time.
We have a good time. We speak in nonsensical sentences, but that's right. Fun for us. Greg pockets.
Gotham City Year One, number 4 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Phil Hester. In this issue, we're dealing with the ramifications of the last issue, where it turns out the baby that Slam Bradley was trying to find the entire time is dead. And he gets the shit beaten out of him repeatedly because of this, leading to a bunch of encounters with other characters. I will say, I feel still a little mixed about this title 4 issues in, even though I like Phil Hester's art. I'm curious to hear what you guys think. And then once we get through that, I have a very spoilery question that I want to ask you.
Ooh. Well, I feel like, what is this book? This book, Tom King, is the Tom King of not really, of being a little coy about his storytelling.
Sure.
But this one feels almost, it's one step out of reach for me as a reader. And I really like Slam Bradley.
Maybe too dark?
It's not even about the darkness, because there are other darker books that we read. I'm just like, what is the story? I see stuff is happening. There are characters together. But the thing is, like, it feels like we're dealing with Thomas and Martha Wayne and a part of their history that we haven't really seen before. But is that what it is? Because it feels like it's too different to match up with the continuity that we know. So I just need – I feel like I'm missing one connective tissue to be like, yes, I see where this fits and I see what the point of this is. So I'm hoping – this is the 4th issue. I think now is the time to get to it. It's hard to doubt Tom King because his work is very good across the board. But I think I really need the thing here.
Well, first of all, just a point of clarification that may help a little bit, and I just very quickly double check this to make sure I was wrong. The characters aren't Thomas and Martha Wayne, it's Richard and Constance Wayne.
Oh, right. Yes, right.
So that is something that, like, reading this initially, I thought they were Martha and Thomas as well. They're not. Here, can we get into a spoil real quick? Because this is a thing that I think is the point of this book. Because as far as I can tell, it's not a Black Label thing. It's in continuity. And part of the conceit is it's a story that Slam Bradley is telling to Batman. I think the point of the story is that Slam Bradley is Batman's grandpa. Like, Slam has a affair with Batman's, I believe, grandmother. And so I think the idea is that they are going to have Thomas Wayne, and Thomas Wayne is the child of Slam Bradley and Batman's grandpa. So he's going to be like, I'm your grandpa. And that's the point of it. I don't know if that makes it worth it necessarily, but that's my guess.
Why would you put that out there?
I'm always putting grandpas out there. You know me.
Well, he certainly looks like a Wayne.
Yep.
Yeah. Lamb does. So that's part of the reason why I think it is confusing yet again.
Yeah, I mean, it's making choices that I don't know why or where we're going. Also, the he's crazy like a bat line, could have gone without that. But the art is just absolutely amazeballs here. And, you know, the tone of Gotham and the coloring of it and what they're doing, it makes it really nice. But otherwise, I'm kind of reading it and just kind of being a little skeptical about what's happening.
Fantastic Four, number 3 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Ivan Coelho. As we have been doing the last two issues, this is essentially a done-in-one story, following this time the Human Torch. What's been going on with him as the Fantastic Four has been separated and spread all over the country for unknown reasons. Just a note, we've gotten the tease that we're going to find out everything in the next issue, which is great. But very fun Human Torch adventure. This was delightful to read. How are you guys feeling, though?
Yeah, I agree. This is a lot of fun. Johnny Storm not fighting this guy, but finding a way to get to him was really fun. And the kind of like, almost goatee, but not a goatee. I don't know if that's a Fu Manchu mustache or what it's called.
Handlebar?
Handlebars.
I think it's a Fu Manchu.
Yeah,
it's a handlebar.
It's a perfect amount of douchey for Johnny Storm in a great way. I think it was a fun last panel, fun arc or one shot, as they say.
I really like Ryan North, and I think Ryan North is capable of doing that thing that I think there's been a little bit more of lately with people like Mark Russell, like can do like a comedy forward story that still is a great story in comics. And it's nice to have that in Fantastic Four, a team that has tended toward like galaxy spanning time travel, big, serious, high stakes storytelling to have a little bit more fun. And then this issue, Johnny Storm is literally like, it's almost a comedy issue. When usually he just gets to say like a little joke, he gets to be a little bit Spider-Man in the middle of like a Galactus boot coming down on planet Earth or whatever. So I like this new tone for this series, and I'm excited to get the inciting incident next issue to see where we're pushing this the Fantastic Four family to.
The Approach, number 3 from Boom Studios, written by Jeremy Hahn and Jason S. Hurley, art by Jesus Hervas and Leah Caballero. As we mentioned with previous issues, this is essentially Alien meets The Thing set in an airport. We're getting a lot of characters who are trying to track down the monster who is killing them in this issue. No big surprise here. The monster kills a lot of them instead.
Monster winning.
There you go. Monster winning so far. Maybe winning forever. I guess we'll have to see. This is a great horror movie in comic book form.
Yeah, I agree. It's a, fun, monster loose, what's going to happen. I just didn't, the evil grandma at the end, I was a little like,
because you love grandmas that are not evil.
Yeah, I like a badass grandma. This is an evil grandma, so it's not.
Still badass, though.
I don't like it.
In fact, her ass is worse than usual, I would say.
Worse ass.
I don't appreciate what you're doing there.
What's badder than badass? Worse ass.
Nope.
Worse ass bananas, we say about this book. Moving on to the next
hold
one.
On real quick. As someone
great art.
I'm going to an airport in like an hour, so this monster in an airport thing is really not hitting well with me. But at the rate the monster's winning here, I don't know what these humans are going to do. There seems to be no weakness. And in fact, the monster just got an ally, a human grandma ally, who based on the Golden Girls, older grandma types can do anything,
That's true.
Secret Invasion, number 3 from Marvel, written once again by Ryan North, art by Francesco Mobili. This is essentially a stealth Maria Hill series as she's trying to track down Skrulls throughout the Marvel Universe. We had a big cliffhanger the last issue where Tony Stark was revealed to be a Skrull. We find out a lot more about that in this issue and how it ties into the Squirrel Girl series from back in the day, also from Ryan North. So nice little shout out there. There's some... Yeah. Pretty gross twists involving Tony Stark's tongue that happened by the end of the issue. I'm really enjoying this in a way that I was not expecting. How about you?
Well, yeah. Shouts to the art. There's a great two-page spread right at the beginning of this that is just excellent. It's Maria Hill. It's plantains. It's straight plantains, I'd say. And so I think it's really good, was what I mean when I say that.
I found it to be runts. Hard runts. Hard runts, I say.
The banana runts?
Because those are the best. Obviously, hard, that's what I'm talking about.
Because those banana runts are the best.
I mean, yeah. Come on.
Hard banana runts. Such a funny swerve on our nonsense catchphrases. Great.
Were you done, Justin? Okay,
yeah, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I really loved the last panel. Such a crazy finish. They've been doing such a fun kind of last panel with this. I feel like this just clicked into gear for me. I really think this issue really kind of set things going in the right direction. I like the choices being made. Super tight bananas to the max art here. I'm having fun with this, and at first I was like, meh, but now this is really kicking some butt.
Dark Knights of Steel, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Yasmin Putri. We finally have all of our characters back in medieval times of the DC Universe are fighting all together against each other, but there's some big reveals here about what's actually been going on in the background. I found the reveals very satisfying in a way that I was not expecting. Justin, why don't you talk about this one a bit?
Same, and I don't want to spoil them because they are really good. I mean, we've big upped Tom Taylor's DC work, but haven't really focused on this story, this series too much, which is doing an effective job of telling something in the vein of like 1602 or any of the sort of like, let's put all of our heroes and villains in a different time period and let them fight in a sort of period way. This does such a great job of pitting them against each other in smart, unexpected ways. And the reveals in this issue sort of turn the dials in a totally new direction that I didn't see coming. So the Tom Taylor sense continues.
Yes, I really agree. This comic should have got more love in our top of the year. This has been really impressive what it's been doing with each and every issue. The Yasmataz on the art is just absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's STB. And yeah, I mean, I love the dragon stuff. There's a lot of fun reveals in here. It's just such a blast. I've been really enjoying the creative choices they've been taking with this book. And a lot of times when you put something in different time periods, it's but they're using it really well in such a creative, cool way.
Spider-Man number 4 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Mark Bagley. In this, I don't remember her name, Shiraz or whatever it is, the Wasp lady is continuing her assault on the Spider-Verse and trying to destroy them and turn them all into wasps and things. And in this issue, spiders are definitely on the losing end. They lost Peter Parker the last issue, and they lose even more in this issue. But we also get the sort of continuity things that only Dan Slott could pull out in a absolutely ludicrous way, where I was like, look, we've interviewed Dan a ton of times, so we know that he is very into continuity. We also know that he is very into having things in his back pocket that he's like, I'm going to pull that out at the perfect time. It is wild to me that this far into his career, he still has things that you read them and you're like, he's been thinking about that for 20 years. He's been and he just waited and then he did it. And just to be like explicitly clear what I'm talking about, they don't have Peter Parker. This is a spoiler for the issue. So they're like, you know what we could do is we could pull out the original Peter Parker, who is Peter Parler, which is based
Palmer.
On a Palmer, excuse me, which is based on a misprint from the first issue in Amazing Fantasy number 15, where they spelled his name wrong one time. So pulling that out, of course, he's been thinking about that forever. This is Spider-Verse and just waiting for the perfect time. So they got a new Peter Parker. It's Peter Palmer. Right. Just great.
I also love the spider buggy with two boots on it, you know, just hysterical. I mean, he's having a ton of fun. This really comes across. This is crazy spiders and different spider verses and different over the top spider things happening. And it's just a blast. And you just reading it and just being like, oh, Dan, you're just having a great time. And it really comes across.
The fun is there for sure, and it's especially nice that Mark Bagley's on art for this because it really reminds me of the
Spider-Man. Man, that guy is on it.
Yeah, Bagley and Bordley it because it's good stuff. It reminds me of like Bagley's run back in like the late 90s where it was like huge, big crossover events. Moon Knight, The Punisher, everyone's fighting everybody. So that's cool because this has that same level of complexity where there's like a million different spider people fighting and being like, what's happening? I don't know what's happening. Let's do, see this. Let's do this.
It's spider dinosaurs.
It's strange to me that this is happening at the same time Dark Web is an equally insane crossover event. So it's sort of like, you know, when you're shifting gears in a truck and it's like these gears don't go together. So it's a little crunchy going between these two stories. But I like them both. And it is funny, like Dan Slott must have like a really fucked up notebook with all of his notes in it that he's been taking over the years because he keeps digging deep and pulling out like a madman, like, I got it, Peter Palmer. And it does work, and you got to give him credit for the master strokes on this. But I can't imagine being like a young reader picking this up and being like, comic books? Got it. Love them. They make sense.
I thought you were going to say, I can't imagine being in Dan Slott's head because it's got to be crazy.
Yeah.
That too. Stillwater number 17 from Image Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Roman K. Perez. We're getting to the end here of Stillwater in graphic and violent fashion. As we now know the secret of Stillwater, we know why people stay alive forever there, and various factions are trying to take control of the two towns that now are immortal. I'm very curious to see how this all ends, because honestly, I just don't know at this point.
Yeah, it's such a the world is so specific and there's so many characters, and this has the end of like a big like chase movie from like the 60s or 70s, like what is like it's a mad world or like Cannonball Run or Smokey and the Bandit, one of those movies where it's like, all right, now everyone's smashing into each other because it's the end of the third act, and it definitely feels like that. And to your point, Alex, like truly anything can happen to finish this story out.
Yeah, it's the old cold water versus still water battle royale that's happening here. You know what I mean? Either way, water's going to win, so I'm excited about that. But yeah, this
real
just
quick,
keeps
which do you prefer, cold or still? Take it away, Pete.
You got to go cold, you know.
I would still argue that they're not mutually exclusive.
Interesting.
Maybe that's the point here.
Well, I don't know. We'll see in the next issue. But
cold
water runs
deep, they say.
Ah, yeah.
Still water don't move, they say.
Oh, ice. Boy. What about ice?
Vanilla as well.
Ice is cold and still, and water.
Nice. All now right. We know how it ends. Take it away, Pete.
Yeah, I don't know where to go after all that, but it's great art. Great story keeps
hard runs.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how this is all going to go down and who's going to win.
Last but not least, Captain America Sentinel of Liberty number 8 for Marvel, written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, art by Carmen Carnero. In the last issue, AIM took over New York City. Captain America woke up in the middle of a field and didn't know what was happening. Turns out that there's a bunch of other heroes that also had their memory played with. They bring in Emma Frost for the cover to help them out a little bit. Some very fun interactions in this issue, I thought, between the various characters. And Pete, you had to love all of the X-Men slams going on here.
Yeah, I mean, this is really crazy. I mean, at one point, Captain America says, Mommy, and then Emma Frost shows up, and I'm like, what the fuck is happening?
I love that moment. So the backstory is, at the Hellfire Gala, he made a deal with Emma Frost, and Emma was like, I owe you a favor. I don't remember specifically what happened. Captain America, I think, foiled some thing that Moira MacTaggert was doing via Jean Grey, or was involved in that.
Whatever.
But anyway, it's like, all you got to do is say this keyword, and of course, the keyword that Emma Frost gave to him was, you have to think Mommy, and then I will show up. Dark, uncomfortable, hilarious.
I mean, the idea that Emma Frost was like in a meeting over on Krakoa and is like, oh sorry, I gotta go. Captain America thought Mommy. Gotta run. I'll be back. I'll be back shortly. But this series continues to be so fun, and also just exploring new areas of Captain America world. We get a different MODOK revealed
here. The red underwater MODOK.
Yes, the Avatar Way of MODOK. MODOK was fun, and the way that they keep reminding us, I like that it's Captain America and all of the Captain America buddies. And then there's also the giant robot guy who's saying, just part of the conversation. They're all like, what should we do? Or here's a joke. And then robot is like, bah, 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 bah. It's like the robot from Lost in Space, their most recent series, mm-hmm. Lost in Space, sort of energy, where it's scary a little bit, but also helpful. I guess that's what all robots are technically now. And we get a nice sort of turn at the end that is fun. I don't know exactly what it means, but I'm excited to find out.
Yeah. And that is it for the stack. If you would like to support us, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
For super tight bananas and hard banana runs, I'm Very Dense Plantains. Good night.